This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Funny's a football game. Aaron, you're deleting that out. We'll start again. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Green and White Podcast, brought to you by Argyle Life. Football's a funny old game, isn't it? 4 days is also a long time in sport and in life. As a Kiam resident, I can testify to that. Following Tuesday's 3-0 home defeat to West Brom, many questions were asked about all things Argyle. No matter what your persuasion you are in that argument that took place on social media, as paying supporters, it is well within our rights to ask questions, to criticise, and to just simply discuss what we witnessed. So as we headed back to the northeast, this time to Teesside to take on Michael Carrick's Middlesbrough, there were always going to be questions that were needed to be answered by Fozzie and the group. Are we being too defensive? Can we let the handbrake off? Is the squad fatigued? Can they go again and find the energy to for a performance to yield a successful trip? I think it's safe to say all those questions were answered in full and in style. Matty Sorinola bagged the opener after an enterprising effort from Darko JB was parried into the oncoming path of our right fullback. And the Green Army didn't have too long to wait to celebrate a second, as that man JB was at the forefront of everything good about Argyle as he fed in Ryan Hardy, who slotted home his 12th goal in the league this season. We weren't done troubling Borough, however, as a host of chances fell the way of Messrs. Sorinola, Gibson and a double chance for Randall, just to name a few, that gave us a first half to remember. In the second half, we were professional, diligent, disciplined and spirited as we saw the game out, not without more chances to increase the lead, to claim a valuable 3 points, our first win in 5, and our first clean sheet since Swansea. Joining me this evening to discuss a famous win in our recent history at one of the division's big boys, fresh from a break from the podcast, making a quick reappearance, is Adam. Adam, good to see you, mate. You good?
Very well, thank you. Much like last time I was here after Swansea, I'm once again high on life.
I think it's safe to say when Adam's on, it tends to be a good game that we're reviewing. Graham, back off the subs bench again. Are you well?
Yeah, well, enjoyed listening to the commentary and watching the performance subsequently this morning. Outstanding. Coupled with going to see the Academy win the Youth Alliance League in the morning. So it was a good day to be an Argyle fan.
It certainly was. We got more on the Academy from Graham later on. And talking of that commentary, making his Argyle Life Green and White podcast debut, the voice of almost every away game nowadays on BBC Radio Devon, it is Drew Savage. Drew, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Are you well?
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, been a great weekend. All I always say is that commentating Argyle, commentating on your own club, if it goes well and we play well, it's the best job in the world. If it goes badly and the fan base is down and performance isn't good, it can be really difficult at times. You know, it can be. I remember when we were in administration, it was like commentating on that was like watching someone you love being beaten up. So a sell-off for Middlesbrough, not quite knowing what it was going to be, and wow, just wow, really.
Pretty much wow. Seems as you were there, Drew. You were the voice behind many a Radio Devon listener's ears on the game. Why don't you talk us through this wonderful win at the Riverside?
It's interesting about the point about our too defensive. I think in this particular game, we were defensive in the right area, which was right up in the final third. That we just got in Middlesbrough's grill pretty early on. I mean, you guys saw the West Brom game and I didn't, so it's sort of, you know, vice versa, isn't it? But we were just on the front foot straight away. And I, from the sound of it, from what everyone's told me, what West Brom did to us on Tuesday night, where we couldn't get out of our own first third and get the ball up the pitch at all, we were doing to them time after time. You know, we weren't giving them a moment's peace. JB was really good in the sort of advanced midfield number 10 role alongside Whittaker. I mean, Hardy's always been good at closing people down. But yeah, we were pressing high and they couldn't live with it. And it just, you know, got an early goal. Great to see. I'm sorry, Nola had, you know, it's almost impossible to pick out. You go, well, yeah, sorry, Nola had a good game. JB had a great game. Randall had a great game. Hardy got a great goal. Gibson and Galloway were both very, you know, solid at the back. Hazard, you know, who had a bit of a mare by all accounts on Tuesday, read the game really well. He looked pretty assured. I mean, by the stats, he didn't have a save to make. But there were a couple of times when Middlesbrough were through on goal and they did shoot and he did save it. They were then proved to be offside. But it's always good as a keeper for your confidence that you get those saves in and go, well, I don't care, the flag's up, stopped it anyway, mate. You know? So, I mean, I think we had something like 13 shots on goal just in the first half. And the only thing, I mean, Hasnail Joffrey, my summariser, said to me off air at half time, I don't know if Middlesbrough can be that bad again. And that was the only worry in the second half. But so the second half was a different kind of performance. Didn't create so many chances. We're still a threat and we were still pressing. I think we ran out of energy a little bit after the hour mark, but that's to be expected. But we saw it out. You know, and this is a team that's beaten Chelsea 1-0 on that ground not so long ago. It's just, and the team that won 2-1 at Leicester last time out. It just shows what a crazy division the Championship can be at times. But, you know, I mean, I live in Manchester, so I it was an early start for me, but that's not compared to the people, you know, there's a coach that left Truro at 3 a.m, things like that. Those people. It just makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it? That, you know, everyone would have been absolutely on the floor after Tuesday night and very much doom and gloom and thinking, where do we go from here? And that's just the experience, isn't it, following Argyle? That you get some highs, you get some lows. And it's right to react when you get the lows. It's, you know, it's right to question everything. And I've never been a, you know, 100% oh, shut up and get behind the team. But I was very pleased when they did come out and they did respond, they did react. And it's everything we wanted, really, isn't it?
It certainly is. And Graham, is that not just the Championship in a nutshell? Middlesbrough go and beat Leicester in the game prior to this. And Argyle put in a pretty lacklustre second half performance, whether it was fatigue or something else, who knows, on Tuesday night. Or whether it was just more credit needs to be given to West Brom. But it's complete roles reversed in this game, wasn't it? Argyle were in almost too much control of the game.
I think West Brom didn't get the credit that they deserved for that performance. Interesting, I saw in Stonebridge at the Academy game, and we were talking about it, and he said that was the best set-up performance he'd seen. So we can't underestimate how well West Brom set up, pushed high, stopped us playing out, and we ran out of ideas very much in the first half and couldn't get anywhere in the second half and, of course, conceded the goals. It was a bad day. I think there was an overreaction to it in many quarters and I was quite upset, I will be honest, to see some of the toxic nature of the commentary that was put about one game. When you look at Ian Foster's record, 8 games, 11 points, pretty good for the Championship with a team with a budget in the bottom two, it's 23rd or 24th. Didn't spend a penny in the transfer window, turnover of 14 players, and bed in a new manager and set up his own particular style. So it was inevitable one game was going to go wrong, and it went wrong spectacularly on Tuesday. But if you think back to the first half of Sunderland, that's how we played against Middlesbrough. We were very much on the front foot and pressed them high. They let us press them high, and it worked. We got an early goal and then got a quick second. If anything, we should have been 4-0 up at half-time. And that would have been a fair reflection. It was actually 17 shots, Drew, in the first half.
Wow.
And 22 in total, 11 on target, which was as high as anybody, I think, in the Championship. Just to put it into context, Liverpool had the similar number of shots, 120-odd minutes today, and same number on target. So it just shows you the sort of scale of how we performed. I thought it was fantastic. And can I just say, JB, outstanding. One of the best performances, non-scoring performances of the season, I would say. It was phenomenal. Can we sign him, please? He's very much a future player. I mean, you can just see him, you know, particularly in that 10 role, which I wouldn't have envisaged for him. He was outstanding. I mean, he's a great ball recoverer, but he strides past you, beats you. And some of his passing, and then passed to Hardy's goal, you know, it was quite a difficult pass that. Hardy moved out a bit wider to take it, but it was phenomenal. So credit to everybody. I don't think anybody had a poor game at all, which is when you get at least everybody on 7 out of 10, that's a good performance to build on. And tough one on Saturday, but I was so pleased that we're back on the straight and narrow as a result of that. I would have hated the toxicity to continue, because we're Argyle fans. We want the best for the club, and we've got to get behind the manager and the players, because they're not going to change.
Yeah, totally agree. Adam, we'll talk about Darko JB now. We'll go on to the finer details of the game shortly enough. But Graham's mentioned it earlier. I'm just going to run you through some of the stats on FOTMOB from JB's performance. Obviously, the assist for Hardy's goal, he had 3 shots. He had 31 touches of the ball, 4 touches in the opposition box. He wasn't dispossessed once, 3 out of 3 on accurate long balls, but defensively as well. You know, he had 1 block, 1 clearance, 1 headed clearance, 2 interceptions, 7 defensive actions, 5 recoveries. He won 4 duels. He also managed to win the team 3 fouls. But obviously the makeup of JB's performance yesterday was the fact that he was pushed into one of the number 10 positions at the expense of Alfie Devine, who was left out. Do you think, Adam, that moving forward, that is where you would much rather see JB, or was it just horses for courses that this game, it just clicked?
For games like this, I mean, absolutely. It goes without saying. The stats you mentioned there make it very obvious. I think what impressed me so much with him being in the number 10 position was the way that he could impact Argyle in both ways, i.e. going forward and in defence. Now, going forward, there's obvious things we can mention. Not only has he got the assist, he's also had the shot that Glover has palmed away before Sorinola's goal. And that shot actually reminded me an awful lot of a goal he scored at the Under-20 World Cup. I think, if my memory serves me well, it was against Uruguay and in front of some pretty partisan support in Argentina as well. So, he's just picked it up in that wide left position, brought it in, and that time he found the bottom corner. This time, obviously, it was saved and the rebound put away. But that's the sort of thing that he can clearly do, and he's clearly good going forward in those areas. His passing as well. I know you've mentioned, and again, I'll touch on the assist for Hardy. It's not the only time that he's been in such a position in that game either. You know, he only made 11 passes in the game, which is not a huge number, but of those, it's 4 key passes, i.e. the pass before a shot. Clearly, whenever JB got the ball, he was a danger and he was putting the Middlesbrough defence under serious pressure. So it is encouraging. And when you look at it the other way as well, you've mentioned again the defensive actions, and I can only agree. I think, Drew, you mentioned the way that we pressed them from the front, and I think JB being there was probably the direct cause of us being able to do that so much better than, to be honest, we have very often before. I mean, we know Hardy can press well, but I think having JB there rather than Devine, and it's not a slight on Devine by any stretch of the imagination, it's just the fact that JB is the sort of player who can do that and who can make that press. So it's a long-winded way of saying yes, probably. I think I do prefer him there. I know one game is obviously not exactly a huge sample size, but I think particularly with Ipswich coming up on Saturday, it'll be the sort of game again where we're not necessarily going to have a huge amount of possession. It's going to be winning it back in the right areas and transitioning quickly that's going to matter. I think that sort of game, much like we had at Borough, is going to be the ideal time to get JB into that position. And perhaps it can be facilitated by, you know, we're saying leaving Devine out as a result of JB. Devine, by all accounts, would not look out of place in one of the deeper roles. He's okay, you may lose some of his ability in those forward positions. He's got two assists already, which I think is quite overlooked and shows that he's doing quite well when he's on the ball. But a lot of what we like about him and a lot of what he's been able to deliver, it's more of the technical stuff than the physical stuff. And sometimes that can benefit being in the more advanced role. But I think particularly when you want a high press and your game plan is so focused on winning the ball in those attacking areas and getting it forward quickly, holding Devine back and having JB in the 10, I think there's something there.
Drew, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. You were on the mic at the John Smith Stadium or whatever it's called nowadays back in January. I was there at Fozzie's first away game. Darko JB played in the defensive role in midfield. You saw him that day. I'm sure you've seen him in between as well. How would you assess him from the player you saw at Huddersfield to the player that you saw at the Riverside yesterday?
I'm just thinking, actually, because I didn't do the Sunderland game and I did the Leeds away game in the Cup, but of course JB wouldn't have played in that. So I think Huddersfield's the only other time I've actually seen him live. So, you know, I thought that was a decent debut. I thought he was a decent, you know, I could tell he was a decent player. And he sort of slotted in well to that position, but he didn't have an amazing game. I thought, you know, of the debutants that day, Phillips was a standout for me on that occasion. So, anyway, I know he can do a job there. He impressed me, reminded me a little bit of Jay Matete in the way that you can give him the ball and you don't care if someone's trying to get him over, if someone's nearby, someone's trying to get off him. You know, that reminded me of, you know, so he's got the ability to carry it forward as well. Oddly enough, I always thought Matete might have been better in a sort of number 10 role. It was interesting, Matete, because I always rated him as a player, but the stats for games that he started were absolutely abysmal. It's like whenever we didn't win a game last season, Matete started it. And I liked him as a player. I never wanted to go on about it. And he was great coming on. He was not a bad player. He never played badly, but there was just something in him somehow that I couldn't spot that somehow indirectly meant we didn't win when he started the match. He was great as an impact player. He was a good player. It's getting off the point slightly, isn't it? But JB, I think I like him in either role, to be honest. And you'd pair him up probably alongside either Houghton or Forshaw. And they would be more of the sort of sitter of the two, and he'd be the one to sort of bring it out a bit more. But it's an interesting point Adam makes about Devine, because we know he was playing for Port Vale in the more defensive position. I think Spurs think of him as more of the attacking player. And I guess when someone's, you know, letting you have their player for either for not very much money or for free or whatever it could be, you kind of want to go along with their wishes and use him the way that they kind of wanted to be used, maybe. That might be a little bit of a factor in there somewhere. But I really did like Jay. You know, it helped. He was probably a bit Fozzie mentioned, you know, he's probably, having not played the Cup games, he was probably a little bit fresher than some of the rest of the team. But, yeah, it was all action. It was all energy. But there was quality to it as well. It was a complete performance, really.
Graham, before we move on from Darko JB, as much as I'm sure he would love podcast devoted to his good performance. We do have plenty to talk about. Just your thoughts on that debate, JB, as a number 10 or in the defensive role. I know we've seen him more in the defensive role, but this was an eye-catching performance, wasn't it?
It was, and I can see no reason why he can't continue there. I think we're going to work on the what I call the 60-30 principle, that he could do 60 minutes there and then Alfie Devine come on for 30 or thereabouts, so they can get the sort of highest energy performance across the whole game. I think that might be a solution, but on that performance, he's got to stay there because he drove the team forward and, as has been said, made several significant contributions. That leaves Jordan and Adam as the two in the middle. And one thing I will say, I think they both were much more aggressive than I've seen them recently. They won a lot of ball, and unlike Tuesday night, particularly with Adam Randall, didn't give it away. That meant we transitioned quickly and effectively. So if Adam Forshaw had a slim chance for this week, I don't know whether he's going to be ready for Saturday, but I'd start with Jordan and Adam in the same. I'd essentially go with the same team, possibly Sorinora or Barley Mumba swap around. I keep JB in that 10 role and see whether it's as effective at home as it was away.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Let's rattle through some full-time thoughts then on comments on Facebook. Nick Carter says, where's all the boo boys and girls and others from Tuesday night? Great response and good performance today and another away win. The only thing that annoyed me from Tuesday was lots of our fans leaving early and booing our players, in brackets similar to the Borough fans today. We're not here to talk about the Borough fans. They can boo if they like. Clearly means we had a good afternoon if they're booing. Argyle till I die. Win, lose or have a crap game, our team need positive support. Then we've got Ray Taylor. When you see the other results in the league, what an absolute crucial win that was for Argyle. Enjoy the journey home. Jay Holiday says, what a fantastic result today. And credit goes to Ian Foster for getting his tactics spot on by pushing Darko JB further forward. And it worked. If I had to pick a man of the match, I would choose two, Darko JB and Adam Randall. And finally, a massive shout out to the Green Army for their fantastic support. Dan Stathers points a bit of a dig at some of those who perhaps went a bit early on their anti-Fozzie talk by saying humble pies in the oven, dig in. And then we've got Barry John says, a real tonic after a dire/toxic week. Have to give the team management and Green Army credit for the perfect response. We'll take a dip into Pasotti Corner, where Tavi Green says, well done to the leadership team and the players. That was arguably our most comfortable win of the season. Same again next Saturday, please. Goody says, happy Saturday night. Huge 3 points, fully deserved. A great team performance. Well done, Ian Foster. Got the team shape and tactics bang on. Guiri Green, apologies if I've got your username wrong there, says humble pie versus sour grapes. Take that as you will. Rush Goalie says, wonderful performance and result. Blown away some doubts after Tuesday. The perfect tonic. Well done to Foster and the team. And then we're going to come on to the Twitter thoughts next, because actually there's an interesting point to raise from these. Dan M says Borough were awful, but our performance was right was night and day, sorry, compared to Tuesday night. Foster made the right changes and we were very good today. We looked much better in midfield and everything just fell into place once we scored first. James Brenton says trying to resist the temptation to say I told you so. James, just say it. You don't need to resist any temptations. Enjoy the moment. Keep the faith in the club. Proper fans don't boo, they encourage. We've then got Ryan says, should have scored 10. Weird what happens when you use your attacking to play attacking football. Simon Fisher, great result and great turnaround from Tuesday. Onwards and upwards. Hopefully we can kick on from this and get some confidence back. Liam Savage says, at the same time as overreacting to Tuesday, let's not overreact to this win. Borough were very poor today, offered no width, no pace, and their slow tempo build-up really helped us. Very glad to get back to winning ways. I'm more than happy for Borough to be very poor yesterday, offering no width, no pace, and having a slow tempo personally. But I wanted to raise the point with you, Drew, first of all, about what Ryan said, saying weird what happens when you use your attacking play to play attacking football, because that brings us on to an interesting comment that you raised yourself in a tweet after media duties yesterday about Ian Foster talking about the levels of performance that he felt that was exactly the same sort of level of performance that we got in the last couple of games. Obviously, you would have seen the last couple of games on highlights and things, but he was defending, I guess, what he said in midweek, wasn't he? That we've come up against three incredibly strong outfits at this level in a short space of time. And you think in two of the three games, Coventry were excellent. Leeds, we were good for an hour and it was a good contest. And yeah, okay, maybe West Brom was one game too many. Is that a thought process you subscribe to?
That seems pretty fair enough to me. It was, yeah, I mean, he said, I listened to it again this morning as well. He basically said, look, you know, people perhaps underestimate how difficult it is against teams that are in the top six. And it's in games like this where we can pick up points. We may well be up against it against Ipswich again next Saturday, but at least we've got the confidence of a really good performance against Middlesbrough. And, you know, I think we learned a bit from what West Brom did to us. You know, I think he may have well said to them, well, look, you know, think what they did to you. That's what I want you to do to Middlesbrough. Don't let them play. Don't let them out of their own first third, you know? It's quite interesting to me because it was, you know, the comment, I'm sure, I don't know how much he reads social media, but I'm sure he would have been told what people were saying. And actually, one of the things I think he was most pilloried for was to saying, well, we've not been playing badly. I think someone said, you know, it's a bit John Sheridan-esque almost. And I thought, well, it's probably not that. I think it's just the way he sees it in a different way than we see it. You know, are the players doing what was asked of them and et cetera and et cetera. I think, you know, particularly in the second half, the West Brom thing just got away from us. It was interesting how he sort of doubled down on his point that he said, you know, and now he's got, it's, you know, much easier to do that with a good performance and a win behind you to kind of back up what you're saying. But he did double down on it. And he said, well, you know, I think the level of performance, the difference between the Leeds game and the West Brom and this game wasn't actually too different. It was partly down to the quality of the opposition. And I think perhaps it does show how good West Brom are at stopping you playing and not, you know, not giving you a chance and not giving you an inch. You know, I guess the sides in the playoffs, some of them, are, you know, they're there for different reasons. Some of them are there because, you know, Leeds are where they are because they've got a really good front four, really good fluid movement. And even if you're not having the best of games, you know, even if they're not having the best of games, they've got the talent there to break you down and score goals against you. And that's exactly what they did to Leicester. Leicester should have been out of sight in that game and Leeds come back to win that. Someone else said to me in the press box, we've been playing Leeds too much recently. That's one of our problems. I mean, actually, the only team that hasn't lost to Leeds when they played in this season has been Plymouth Argyle. Let's not forget that either. It is interesting. Also, you know, a lot of the games we've got coming up after Ipswich, they are against teams lower down in the table, often below us in the table. You know, we've got Sheffield Wednesday and Blackburn both away after that. And particularly that Sheffield Wednesday game, I hate the word six-pointer, it's a cliche, but we win that. And suddenly, you know, how many points are we on now? I think we need what?
Possibly we're on 40 now.
Yeah, so probably, well, four more wins, definitely safe. Three more wins and a couple of draws would do it. You know, actually, if we were able to beat Ipswich on Saturday, win it Wednesday, we're halfway there, aren't we?
Yeah. I was looking at it earlier today and it sort of sounds a bit crazy, but one win a month between now and the end of the season, throw in a draw a month as well, is probably going to be more than enough. And if you'd said to us all the way back in August on the eve of the Huddersfield game that you'd be in a situation on the 25th of February that you're potentially three wins and three draws away from staying in the Championship, you'd have broken somebody's arm off trying to take that outcome, wouldn't you?
The thing is, we're still dealing with quite a sort of small statistical sample for Ian Foster's management, head coachery, whatever you want to call it. The big fear after Tuesday was, and particularly because we got nothing out of the Leeds game, having been all right after half time and looked like we might nick a goal back, we might get back in the game, and then they scored a second, and that was that. But, you know, we'd got 1 point from three home games, and I can see why people look at that and think, well, is this a pattern? Is this how it's going to be? Is the whole season going down the toilet? And it is a mercurial thing being a football fan, being an Argyle fan. You are up and down, but nevertheless, it's, you know, if we got into Tuesday afternoon early this week and said, right, well, you'll beat West Brom and lose at Middlesbrough, no one would have batted an eyelid, would they?
So that's exactly it.
We've done it the other way about. That's the only thing. But it feels a lot better to say 11 points from 8 games reinforced rather than 8 points from 8 games if we'd lost yesterday, you know?
Yeah, Graham, you touched a little bit earlier that you were a little bit miffed, if you like, at the negativity and the toxicity from Tuesday night's game. Do you agree with what Drew said there, that Foster doubling down on his viewpoint post West Brom isn't necessarily a bad thing? It's not necessarily a case of him boosting his own ego. It's just the fact that he was right in what he said in the cold light of day after Tuesday night.
Yeah, I actually wonder how he defined performance, because if he meant distances covered by the players, the heat maps where they should have been, all the precise measurement that goes on player performance, it's quite possible there wasn't a huge difference between the three games, but outcomes are shots on goal and goals scored, and that's where the West Brom game fell so spectacularly short, because we just couldn't create those clear-cut chances which we did against Coventry and to a lesser extent against Leeds. So I think he looks at performance in a different way to the we do, the way they executed the game plan, the shape and all the rest of it. It's at a different level to how we view a game. And I can only say it's that. I mean, as for the reaction, as I said before, I think it was totally over the top. I mean, I do remember us losing, was it Millwall and Swansea, or Swansea and Millwall in a week. It'd be interesting to see the commentary after that. I wouldn't mind betting it was something similar. And it seems to be a knee-jerk, possibly inspired by the Michael Beale situation at Sunderland. You know, just get rid of, you know, sack the manager as the first port of call when you suffer a bad performance and a poor result. And you just can't do that. I mean, Shuey's going through the same at Stoke. I mean, he's lost 6 out of 7. So imagine where Ian Foster would be if that was the case. So I know the Stoke fans are on his back, but, you know, it's just put it into some relative context. We've won 3, drawn 2 and lost 3 under Ian Foster in a tough run of fixtures in a compressed period. It's OK. We get, I think it's 1.3 points per game. If we do that for the rest of the season, we'll be comfortably secure.
Yeah, definitely. Adam, before we move on to the questions side of tonight's episode, just touch on Fozzie's substitutions yesterday, because in the previous couple of games, there's been a lot of, I guess, suggesting that maybe they can be telegraphed by opposition very easily. There were particularly three games in a row where on the 60, 65th or 70th minute, both fullbacks are off and we're getting the fresh legs in that position. There was none of that yesterday. And it was very much, I'm making a substitution when I need to make a substitution. You know, if somebody is beginning to flag, right, they're coming off, we're getting the fresh legs in that position. His substitutions worked an absolute dream, didn't they?
They did. And I suppose it helps when you're already 2-0 up and you've got the luxury almost of making substitutions on your own terms, shall we say. But yeah, he used them well. It was a very, very different, as you say, to the way we've just subbed off the wing backs and brought on two more wing backs as we have for the last few. I mean, to be honest, his substitution did surprise me. I was pretty shocked that Mikel Miller played the 90 minutes after catching a ball that was 3 yards in play in the first half and getting himself booked. So, you know, fair play for sticking with him. But yeah, he's done well. He's done well. I mean, it was 73 minutes before we made the change. And it's interesting because actually, I know between 60 and 65 minutes is when we've been making the changes recently for the wing-backs. But actually, Burrow made their two, or their first two, I should say, 59 minutes. I was thinking, surely, you know, he's going to respond. Surely we know what Fozzie's like. We know he's likely to make those changes at the same time. And he's likely to respond to the fact that they've just brought on a couple of forward players and are really going to challenge us. But he stuck to his guns. And, you know, it is, as we've all said, you know, he picked his right moment this time. He took off the players who thought were flagging. I look at the fact you don't usually sub off a centre-back, but saw Plegi was flagging a little bit. Get Phillips on there. Why not? You know, he's done well. And I think it's almost the way he's used his substitutions are exactly the same juxtaposition with the West Brom game as the entirety of it, in the sense that everything that happened this weekend was as good as everything Tuesday was bad. And Foster's use of substitutions was a perfect example of that.
Yeah, definitely. Before we move on to the questions that have been sent in, and we've got quite a few to get through tonight, open the floor to the three of you. Is there anything else you want to throw in about yesterday's performance? Obviously, we could sit here all night and talk. For once, we could sit here all night and talk about the chances that we didn't put away, and perhaps the fact it was only 2-0 was probably the only real disappointment, if you like, if you're being overly critical on the game. But is there anything else anyone wants to flag up before we move on?
I think on the spirit of that, Joe, I just look at the chances we had in the first half. One in particular, or I should say two in particular, that stick out, the Randall chances. Now, I know that's probably the overriding memory of what Randall did in that game was the fact that he could have made it 3-0 and put us out of sight by the end of the first half. But actually, if we just subtract that for a moment, and I know this may seem like me trying to get easy podcast brownie points by praising the local lad, but I genuinely thought Randall had an excellent game. He was at the centre of so much we did. I know we spent a lot of time on JB, but I couldn't let it go without mentioning Randall as well. I mean, he's gone into a game in the key central midfield position against a team that have a lot of quality, and he's won 90% of his duels. It's an outstanding figure, and you consider what he's done going forward as well. Yes, okay, he nearly scored, but maybe he should have scored, but he's also driven forward through, made that chance for himself, and he's probably as good as anyone that he didn't do better. But it's just one example of how much he offered going forward. I think if you look back at the first goal, as I recall, it's Randall's turnover that actually gets the ball into Whittaker, who then puts it forward for JB's shot that leads to the goal. So, you know, really, really impressive. And I think we all think back to Foster's first games in charge and Randall starting off on the bench, and there was a slight thought of, has he fallen out of favour? Is he going to be the player under the new manager who doesn't quite get as much of a look in as he did previously? I think he's put that to bed now, because some of his recent performances have genuinely been sensational, and no more so than yesterday. And the only thing missing, as you say, was the goal. But when you've already 2-0 up and that's how it ends, it doesn't matter too much. So, yeah, hats off to him.
I think Adam's in Aaron's good books for the next few weeks about throwing some Adam Randall praise in. Graham, Drew, anything else you want to add in on Borough?
Finn is as. What happened? What happened to one of the best midfielders in the division? He was anonymous, wasn't he? Did he have any forward passes? Did he do anything? I know he scored a couple of spectacular Argyle-type goals in the last few games, but he was anonymous. And £2.5 million and significant wage. And I just wondered how Middlesbrough fans were reacting to Andrew. Did you get any feeling about what they thought about him?
I think he's gone down quite well there. I do wonder, actually, and it was in the back of my mind for part of the game, and I never asked Ian Foster about it afterwards because I've forgotten it again by that point. It's amazing how things sort of drop out of your head when you think of something else sometimes. But I did wonder if we did a job on him, you know, that Houghton and Randall know him very well and will know probably more than anyone else in the league how to stop him. Nance as well, I guess, you know. Maybe that had a little bit of a bearing on it, that they, you know, that they'll know how to play against him more than some other people do. I don't think it was our, you know, specific plan to, like, you know, it's not like stop him and you stop Middlesbrough or anything, because actually the way we stopped them was by stopping them playing out their own half a lot of the time. But yeah, I think we did a pretty good job on him on the quiet. And yeah, just to echo again the point, I mean, Hasney, my pundit, he actually made Randall man of the match ahead of JB, and JB had a hell of a game. And as you say, when it looked like when Foster came in and the transfers went in and out, that actually Forster and JB were going to be the first choice defensive midfield pairing. And we've got Middlesbrough with Houghton back in the team as captain, who has gone under the radar a little bit, but he's not just only back in, but he's back in, he's got the armband back. He played well, not quite as well as, not or eye-catchingly well, I would say, as JB or Randall. But another, you know, suddenly you've got Houghton and Randall back in there. You've got competition for places, and they've responded well to it. You know, that their heads could have gone, you know, their heads kind of gone down. I thought, well, I'm not flavour of the month anymore. I'm not, you know, whatever. Not this, not that. But they both were back in the team, and they really seized that chance. They responded well.
I'm going to spare everyone the ref watch segment this week because I actually don't have anything to add on ref watch. We'll forget it for a week.
On that, I loved when Mikkel Miller leapt up and caught the ball because it was going over his head and been over here. It reminded me of like playing football in the park with your mates. That you know, you just think, oh crap, if I don't grab that now, that's going miles. I have to run across like three pitches to go and get that. I felt sure that he was just somehow like back in the park with his mates, and that's why he did it. And when the ref got out the card to book him, I just thought, oh come on. I know people want, a lot of people think want consistency out of refereeing. What I want is human beings applying the laws of the game in a way that involves common sense and judging each case on its merits. Yes, it was an obvious handball, but it wasn't an obvious handball to gain an advantage, was it? There's no advantage to that whatsoever. The moment he caught the ball, he knew he wasn't going to do anything with it. It's not like he was basketballing in the penalty area or anything. That's not worth a yellow card. That's daft.
I think my favourite moment of Miller catching the ball was as he grabs it and realises just where he's landed and his feet are actually still in play, the look and disgust on his face when he realised what he'd done and that he was probably about to receive a dressing room fine for the most comical yellow card collected all season. We'll get on to questions because, as I say, I do want to devote quite a bit of time, if we can, to the academy success on Saturday. Just flicking through the Facebook questions, unfortunately we've answered quite a lot of them. JB about the players and the performance, whether or not Foster's learned anything from West Brom. We sort of think that perhaps he was right in what he said in the cold light of day. It's not a question, but it's a comment, Drew. We'll throw it your way anyway. It just says Jay Holiday saying, Drew Savage is a fantastic commentator on Radio Devon, and his co-commentator, Hasni Al Jofre, is brilliant as well. So we'll get that one in for you there.
Too kind.
We've got on Twitter, hopefully we haven't answered all of these questions so far. Adam, we'll come to you for a comical one to start with. Jack Coleman, regular on the lives, asks simply, can we start a GoFundMe page to bring Finn as Az home?
After that, I mean, I'm not entirely sure we want to spend the money on that after what we've seen. No, in all fairness, it'd be lovely to still have him around, but alas, he's not quite a Darko JB, is he?
No, he's not. And there was a lovely, to be fair, Argyle TV did pick up on a lovely thing at the end there where he was chatting with the Argyle players and things at full time. Absolutely zero animosity between the two parties there. I think most of the Argyle lads strongly wishing us as well in his career, because it was...
Doesn't it?
But, I don't want to go for old ground about...
Yeah, sorry. Just say the way that we've reacted to some departures, I don't think there's any animosity on us as at all. I think obviously he's a great player. And he always came across and through his work in the community and the way that he's chatting at the end is a great person as well. So yeah, I mean, maybe I was a bit harsh saying he's no Darko JB, but let's not let my reactionary self have a bad time.
I sort of don't want to go over old ground on, because we've talked about Azaz's departure and things, but of course his tenure at Argyle just felt different, did it? You don't normally get a lone player for 18 months. He sort of felt like one of the family, so there was always going to be that emotion attached to it. Bit more of a comical one, Ben, not a troll, he's on Twitter, Drew, if you didn't already know. Ben simply asks, will Drew have his mug? I think by the glass of... The glass of white in your hand is probably not the mug this evening.
No, but it's weird, isn't it? Well, I've got a new superstition now as well, on top of everything else. I don't know if you saw the photo on Twitter, but they were supplying cups of Bovril at Middlesbrough. So Hasney and I thought, we both thought, yeah, we'll have a Bovril. Are the beefy drinks available, or are they? I don't know. Does anyone else make them? But anyway, you know, so maybe that could be the new superstition now. But yeah, my good old mug's done us well over the last season, didn't it? Nothing down to Schumacher, nothing down to Ryan Hardy, nothing down to Morgan Whittaker, anybody else. It's all down to the mug.
Graham, I'm going to throw this one to you. It's rather appropriate. It's from somebody called Ryan on Twitter. I think you may or may not have connections to this Ryan of the Argyle Parish. He asked, would this reaction performance have happened if it wasn't for Tuesday? Or as Fozzie said, levels of performance were good, we just played against better opposition.
He did give me advance warning of the question coming, if that's a clue. I just think the West Brom game, we weren't at it. Nothing galvanises you like a poor defeat. And that's been our trademark, actually. I think, didn't we beat Norwich 6-2 after a previously poor performance and defeat? So we tend to recover quite well from poor performances. So as long as we poor performance win, poor performance win, we'll be, our status in the Championship will be secured fairly quickly on that basis. But I'm sure that, you know, the players and the team management can't have not been aware of the veracity of what was being said and probably felt quite unjust about it in many quarters. So I'm sure that gave them double determination to put on a show, not least for the 1,000 or so fans that had travelled all that distance. Which, it's back to the unity, isn't it? Spirit between the team and the players. And
yeah.
Demonstrated superbly on Saturday.
It certainly is, and I think the whole poor performance win, poor performance win is sort of the roller coaster that we might be on between now and the end of the season that Fozzie referenced in his post-match media. There's a lot of talk about this, and I suppose it comes off the back of, I'll go around all three of you for this actually, although we probably just get agreeing on points, but we'll do it anyway. Obviously, this week is going to be the first one in four, if memory serves me right, where we don't actually have to go again in midweek. Fozzie talked post-game with yourself, Drew, and with the club's media that the players are going to get a break. They need it mentally and physically and emotionally and everything else. It's a big game on Saturday. Obviously, we're going to preview it a little bit later on. We've got one of the touted promotion contenders come into town. it's massive that they're going to get a couple of days off this week, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, you know, it was, I think it's our seventh game in 22 days, something like that, including extra time against Leeds, which I had been sort of saying that kind of killed us, that extra time. I'd much rather Brendan Gallagher hadn't scored and we hadn't gone really, really into the red with our energy and shipped three goals as well, which, it, you know, it didn't feel like a 4-1, but it, nevertheless, it was, you know, and ever since then, yeah, I think before that game, we'd won 3 and drawn 2 under Fozzie. We were unbeaten. He was very much slaver of the month. And even after it, even though we'd lost 4-1 in extra time, we'd still take them to extra time. But since then, we'd struggled. So, yeah, I mean, to have a week, to have a bit of a break, to have a bit of a reset, and then we do go again. And hopefully he might get a bit more chance to, for things to just knit together, gel together a little bit better, you know. Hopefully it's all good.
Anything to add, Adam, Graham? A free week, a luxury.
I think we need a rest from it as well, to be fair. It's been hard graft watching and commiserating and it being elated. It's been the emotions have been stretched this month for sure.
I'll just say thank God we didn't beat Leeds and then we'd be on our way to Stamford Bridge for a midweek just before that Ipswich game. Do you know what? I'll take it this way around. Thanks.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
been there, done that, Chelsea.
Exactly. You know.
Plus, having seen their performance in the League Cup final today, I'd actually have fancied our chances in midweek, particularly after that attacking performance in the first half. That was Matt and James, by the way, who asked the questions about full week on the training pitch and having the break. What have we got here? Jack Leslie asks, Adam, come to you on this one. Jack Leslie asks, would you agree going forward we need to persist with an experienced duo in midfield to allow JB to roam further forward? We looked so much more composed and compact yesterday over going with both Devine and JB. Far too young and inexperienced without a player like Houghton or Forshaw in the midfield. Is it important, basically, to have an experienced head in there?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what exactly we mean by experience. Do we mean players that have so many championship appearances in their careers, or do we mean players that are familiar with the system? I mean, you wouldn't necessarily call Adam Randall the most experienced player in the world, but I think having him in there in particular made such a difference to what we're doing. And I know I've covered that in more depth than I need to, but you know, I think let's think back to the start of Foster's reign, which was, again, largely positive with JB and Devine both on the field. Equally speaking, we had our first away win of the season with an excellent performance from Adam Forshaw, who's by far the most experienced midfielder we've got. So I don't really think it's a necessity that we have that we cannot play with JB and Devine. I think it can work. I think we have to pick and choose the games that it will work. And yeah, I think when you're playing the very top sides, like Leeds United, for example, then it obviously isn't. But of course, JB was unavailable for those anyway, so it's a moot point. So, yeah, I wouldn't go through and say we absolutely cannot use that midfield pairing or those two together in midfield again this season. I think we absolutely can, but we need to be clever how we do it. And certainly having Forshaw available and allowing for that competition in midfield in the future, as I know we've discussed already, can only be a good thing. So I think there's a lot of things that can work, and it's just about being clever and how we do it.
Yeah, a couple of questions left. There's one that I'll get all your thoughts on before we start to wrap up. But Drew, come to you for the first one. It might be a little bit more tricky, obviously, because you sort of, with where you live and things, you dip in and out of away games, which ones you do, and then it's stuck to the highlights or full match replays, whatever it is. Bearing in mind Huddersfield 3-1, Blackburn 3-0, Norwich 6-2, Sunderland 2-0. Where does that result and performance rank in the wins that we've collected this season? Obviously, it's crazy to say that it was our biggest result when you think we've beaten somebody who are now a playoff contender 6-2 at home. But for me personally, I would say that probably is our best performance and best result of the season.
I think you've got to put it in the context of what it's come immediately after, for one thing. That, you know, particularly if you look at, you know, we're now getting right down towards the business end of the season. And if you look at, you know, nearly everybody below us in the table, bar Stoke and Rotherham, who lost to QPR, who themselves are, you know, right down there, they all won. If we hadn't won on Saturday, we would suddenly be 2 points above the relegation zone and we'd be at home to Ipswich on Saturday. It's really got us out of a bit of a hole. And the fact that, you know, we limited... They're a mid-table side, Middlesbrough, and they hadn't actually won at home since just before Christmas when they beat West Brom. You know, so they're a bit... You don't quite know what Middlesbrough you're going to get. But I think, yeah, as I say, it is, as you rightly say, it's hard for me to rate it as a performance against the others because, you know, it's very rare I will watch a full home game because I'm usually working, doing my main job for the BBC. You know, it's mainly highlights. So often home games, mainly I just get to see the highlights. But the fact that, you know, it was so one-sided on paper, the fact that, you know, Middlesbrough didn't have a shot on target, I think you've got to not just judge it in terms of what we did ourselves, but what we did to the opposition. And we completely stopped Middlesbrough from playing. It's got to be up there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. That brings us on to the question that probably a lot... That was Rhubarb, by the way. Great, great Twitter handle, at Rhubarb. Hello, Rhubarb, on social media, asking that one. So that brings us on to the final question, really. And as I say, we're gonna go around the group because it's all, you know, we all have our own difference of opinion on this. We have just 12 games to go. It's crazy. It feels like only yesterday that we were getting ourselves all excited and giddy for that Huddersfield game all the way back in August. I bet it doesn't feel like yesterday for Neil Warnock that he was getting himself all ready to come down to Home Park on the opening day of the season. Woolwell Green asks us the simple question, given the form of all the teams at the bottom, except Rotherham, bit harsh because they were, you know, they're plucky and they're getting there, but perhaps they just don't have the quality to necessarily get over the line in 90 minutes. How many points do you think we need to stay up from now? Obviously, we should mention that on paper, the away forms in average position of teams in the league compared to the home games are potentially now easier. And the monkey is off the back that we now have two wins on the road rather than that solitary one. We'll go around the room. Graham, Adam, we'll finish with Drew. How many more points? Bearing in mind we're on 40, what do you think is going to be the magic number?
Well, until a few weeks ago, the average over the last 10 years to survive in the Championship was 45 points. But we've got a really unusual league in as much as we've got teams running away with it at the top. The group in the middle and a really large, I think the bottom 10, I think it is, all within range of being relegated. And of course, one win changes everything. 3 points makes a big difference. So previously thinking 45 would be enough, I'm not so sure now, because I think we need more than two wins to survive. But we mustn't forget that all the other teams below us are playing each other as well. So we it's not possible for all of them to sort of do as well as us. We've just got to do better than three other teams for the rest of the season, and then we're safe. That's the principle. So I think I was at 46. Now I'm tempted to be nearer to 50, I think, to survive. It depends. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday have closed the gap a bit. Stoke have fallen into it. I mean, Stoke have got Leeds, one of the next two games anyway. So, you know, how many points they're going to get? If we win, they lose. You know, that 6-point difference suddenly looks so much more healthier when you're looking at the table. So I always look at the third from bottom, and it's currently Stoke, and well, we 5 points, better goal, significantly better goal difference. So effectively, that's six at the moment. So so I would go for 50 points for survival.
Adam?
Yeah, I think I'm in a similar boat in the sense that I think it's gone up. I was chatting to another Argyle Life writer who I'll keep unnamed for the purposes of their self-respect. But I mentioned that I thought it was 45 that it was going to reach. He actually thought it might be 43 that would be enough to keep us up. Right now, I think it's going to be higher than both those figures. My instinct is 47 will be enough. I.e., if we get three more wins or two wins, two draws, we'll be all right. And the reason I'm thinking that is, okay, you can look at the teams that are there at the moment. You can say, okay, we're 5 points clear now. Is it possible that they can make up 5 points in the next 12 games? Well, yeah, of course it is. But you look at the teams now that are providing a buffer. We have got six teams between us and Stoke. There's a lot of potential, like you say, Graham, that they're going to play each other, take points off each other. A lot of them, based on what I believe, have got leads to play. So, yeah, I think it's going to be, I touch wood, it's going to be less than 50. I think 47 will probably do it, but it's an ever-evolving situation. So if you have me on this again, I might have a different answer next week.
Drew, any advance on 47 or 50?
Mainly because I think I can't remember if it's Neil Jewson or Ian Foster. They said possibly 52. I think our goal difference is so good that actually it's worth an extra point. So I'll go 51. But if you had asked me a couple of weeks ago, I would equally, like everyone else, would have said lower, because Sheffield Wednesday were, Rotherham, you can probably write them off, to be fair now, I think. But Sheffield Wednesday were struggling. QPR was struggling. Millwall hadn't won in donkey's years. And then they get Neil Harrison as manager, and they go and win it 2-1. It was Southampton they won away at. So suddenly, Huddersfield win as well. Stoke are on the slide a little bit, but there's all those teams. But suddenly, I thought I thought there's four not very good teams in this league, and we've just got to be slightly better than them, and that would do it. And actually, some of those teams are now proving me wrong. So I'm a little bit jumpy, and it's probably a little bit safety first, but I think 51 would definitely do it. But again, we've got QPR at home, we've got Wednesday away. Those two games, win those two, we won't be far off.
I think it's typical Argyle, isn't it? We said it last year, it's typical Argyle that the one year we finally get back into the Championship is the year it needs 98 points to do so. And it's typical Argyle that the year we're trying to stay in the Championship, it just happens to be a ridiculously high figure needed. The way I look at it, for what it's worth, is that we've still got to play, as Drew mentions there, we've still got to play Rotherham, Sheffield Wednesday, Stoke away, QPR come to town. We've still got to go to Huddersfield. We've still got to go to Blackburn. I get football isn't played on paper and it's not as easy as this, but the simple way I look at it, if we avoid defeat in those games, it makes it very hard for those teams to then make up the points. Even if you just get a point in every one of those games, that is one game less for those teams below us to make up the ground. And we are good enough to pick up results either way. For what it's worth, I've been banging the drum all season that 45 was always going to be enough, because I'm a bit of a naive idiot. And I'm sort of having to step back on that. And I do think 50 is the hallowed figure. But enough about relegation. Let's talk about another title win in what has been a brilliant couple of years for Argyle as a club. It's another Alliance League title, not for Darren Way's under-18s, this time for Jamie Lowry's Argyle under-18s. And we have just the man to talk about it, because, Graham, you were there to witness a quite bonkers game of Alliance League football. Take it away.
Yeah, I think, first of all, it was played at the Millennium Road, which is a couple of pitches which Argyle, I think, rent off the council. The main game, because there was two games on at the same time, the 15s and 16s played on the other pitch and lost, I think, 5-2 to Swindon. But the grass was long, it was really boggy, you couldn't play any constructive football on it. Not criticising the preparation of it, it's just how it was. And I did hear that they wanted the game to be postponed, but they couldn't, because they jumped straight into the next tier of the Youth Alliance next week. So it had to be played. And it favoured Swindon, to be fair, because they were quite a strong physical side who previously beaten Man United in the FA Youth Cup the previous round. I think they're in the quarterfinals. They were a good outfit, and they made it tough for us. They're very robust defensively, and you know, when you got the likes of Freddie and Caleb sort of used to skimming across perfect surfaces, it wasn't so easy for them, and so it proved. And we went a goal down relatively early. Freddie got one back with a sort of side foot finish. They went up the other end, scored from a corner. And then just before half time, they got the third. I think they're up against it. And I remember their keeper saying, "That's it, we've won it," at half time. I thought, that's fatal. And straight after the second half, playing out from the back error, don't do it on a pitch like that. And we got caught 4-1 down. I thought, oh my God. And then out of nowhere, and I don't know who scored it, I think it was on the left side, an absolute worldie right in the top corner within a minute of them scoring. So it's 4-2. Then we get a penalty, which there was a lot of kerfuffle. The centre back was giving it full on to the ref, and he must have said something serious because he got a straight red. So they were down to 10. Caleb put the penalty away. So it's 4-3, probably with about 10, 12 minutes to go. And we huffed and we puffed and we just never looked like the goal was coming. And then I'd be kind to say it was a controversial handball on the edge of the area, which consulting with the linesman, anyway, it was given, and Caleb put it away, and the final whistle blew, and that was it. Oh, no, there was one amazing incident after that. It's 4-4. All you got to do is take your time, play out. So I played it back to Dan Holman, our keeper, pick the ball up, and then he put it down, went to play the ball out, and picked it up again. And, of course, the referee's gone, the wrist has gone, everyone's like, oh, that's the end of the game. No, it was a free kick inside the area. So their goalkeeper, who was one that was absolutely outstanding keeper, destined for a good future, I'm sure, he had the most amazing kick on him. So he actually took the free kick in the penalty area. And they charged the wall, and this time, unlike at Sunderland, the wall didn't break. They charged it in unity. Ball bounced out, and the ref blew the whistle, and that was it. So, I mean, credit. One of the things you do see, because obviously you're on the touchline, and you see the intensity, you see the physicality, the determination, and I have to say, second half, our goal was superb. They were absolutely superb. That determination. Lewis Colwell, who is the captain right back, drove the team forward. They never believed that they were out of it. And I was really impressed. I mean, I hadn't seen a few. I do try and get to see academy games, and I hadn't seen some of the players. But they played the back three, same system, two wing-backs pushing high. And the back three of Sullivan, Matthews and Jensen Ireland, who he's about 6'4". He's another sort of like Ashley Phillips in stature. They were really, really good because Freddie is, if you think he's quick on the first team level, he's absolutely blistering quick when you see him close up. Phenomenal. And Caleb Roberts, who I liked for a long time, what a gifted player he is. Two great feet, intelligence, but what I really like, he gets stuck in. And I'm sure he's going to grow, and he's going to be the Adam Roberts of the future, I'm sure. But great, great for the club. I think they go into the next, I think they play against the Southeast region, which isn't as glamorous as it sounds, because it's like Cambridge and Peterborough, I think, are the two teams that finish top. So it's that sort of level. It's all the League One, League Two teams. I don't think there's a Championship side in it. And similarly with the Northwest region. So we play a bit further geographically, so we're used to that, see where we go. But great effort, considering where Swindon are in the FA Youth Cup, the final eight, that's some performance.
It certainly is, and I'm not sure whether we're sure it's 2 years in a row or 3 years in a row that we're proving our dominance in this level. But Adam, the hard work starts now for these kids, doesn't it? They've done the hard yards in getting themselves the title. As Graham says, now they pit themselves against even, you know, potentially better opposition than they've been playing already in another pool of fixtures. And then it's a case of, I suppose it's a different dynamic this year in the respect that there's a new manager in the building as well. So there's a new mind to impress when it comes around to the end of season and those contracts, those golden tickets, if you like, that are handed out.
Yeah, very much so. And I think it's only likely to have a galvanising effect that they've got someone else who they can go in and impress. But it is that moment now, isn't it? It's they won the league in sensational circumstances with a few players who are reaching the age and are reaching the talent, actually, where they may be playing for the academy for the very last time. And if they are, what a way to go out. Hopefully that momentum can carry forward. We can see some of those players get the contracts that I'm sure plenty deserve. I mean, it's incredibly unprofessional of me that I don't keep a closer eye on the academy before coming on and chatting away about it. But I'm sure we'll see one or two names that get their reward. And yeah, hopefully with that, and you look at what we're doing with the academy as well, with Brickfields and everything going through, hopefully this is the start of something even more major coming through our youth ranks in the years to come. And if it can have the effect of stealing young players from other teams in the region, like, I don't know, Exeter City, for example, well, that's a bonus as well. So long may this success continue.
I remember coming on when Aaron wasn't asking me to host before Christmas after the FA Youth Cup game against Crystal Palace. And I remember saying that night that when the side developed their belief that they could actually go toe-to-toe with Palace and more than match them in the game, Argyle were outstanding that night. And Drew, just quickly on this, obviously it will have helped them in the run-in, having people like Caleb drop down to the academy for the last couple of games, and Freddie was obviously made available for this one and obviously managed to get his goal and presumably had a massive impact on it. When it comes round to the end of the season and they have now got this new mind, this new person to impress, Foster's previous work with the England age group, just how much of an impact do you think that's going to have on some of his decisions? In the past, we've had managers who've just made, you know, quick decisions, will take potentially you and you through, we think you've got the potential. But now that Foster's worked with so many of England's best talents at the ages that these kids are at now, do you reckon that'll add a different dynamic towards all the contracts and first-year pros that are handed out, or will they continue with the continuity that they've done the last couple of years?
I think one of the main reasons that they went for Foster over a couple of the other candidates are a lot of what they want him to do with Argyle is developing young players. So, you know, it will be purely on merit. But if there are one or two, three or four, hopefully, that they think they can make something out of, he's got the track record of taking young players and knitting them into a group and incorporating them into a team. And that's very much what Simon Hallett's vision for the club is, what Andrew Parkinson's vision for the club is. And if there's another Randall or another Michael Cooper out there, then, you know, in Isaka, Will Jenkins-Davis, who's currently out on loan as well, you know, I think a player could go very far in the game. So if a couple of these lads could do the same, it'd be great, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. And I think the dream is one day that the team will be at least 50% full of academy graduates. I think that would be a great thing, given particularly where Plymouth is a city, that we could make a homegrown team. But congratulations to Jamie Lowry and the boys on their title win. Hopefully the rest of the season is as fruitful for them. And as we've seen before, there is the potential even for a few of them to get onto the first team bench and even get some minutes between now and the end of the season. There's nothing on my running order that we've missed off to this point. Unless there's anything else, I think we'll call it a night there on Middlesbrough. Thanks for joining us. This week, we are recording a very exciting My Argyle Life this week, which will come out potentially as a package with one or two others that have already been pre-recorded, which will be a very insightful listen to the Green Army. And we will be back later on this week with a full preview on the Ipswich game, which, of course, we aren't just about to record now once we finish recording this one. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So that's it for this week. Drew, pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Keep up the good work. Graham, Adam, I'm sure we'll see you again in the future weeks. But for now, it's good night.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.